I want to talk about non-technical things a bit, but actually more about us as a community, as a web development community, and the problems that we're facing at the moment, and the change that we're facing, and how we actually are dealing badly with the change and badly with the ideas. And I found that especially in Germany, I get this problem all the time. Something new comes out, and the first 20 blogs in German are like, oh, this is not going to work ever. And this is not going to be good, and like there's no structure behind that, and we haven't used it for 4 years, so it can't be good. And it's really tricky to do that. As you know, I live in England, and I don't have a car in England, so it's actually quite good to... normally I drive in America, where you go on the motorway, and you tease the poor car by driving 55 miles an hour, and you have like a BMW, and you're like, yeah, I know you want to, but I can't. And like, and that's quite good coming back to Germany for Christmas, because this was my way here. I got this nice Golf, and I had the great CD with me. So I don't know if you can see the 193, but I didn't know that actually that car can do it, but it can. And it's these 100 signs are really blurry when you go past, and it's not like Need for Speed. You don't get points for crashing into other cars, but what can you do? So I wrote a blog post yesterday night, which is more or less this talk, except a few more things in the talk, that there seems to be a winter discontent. And Paul talked about this, that there were Divya had this massive clash on Smashing Magazine with her article, and Paul managed to actually piss off Zeltman. And a lot of people actually are talking to each other badly at the moment and actually arguing in public that one person is wrong and the other person is wrong. And a lot of times people say it's personal attacks. And actually, most of the time, they're not. They're just, it seems like we're so, oh my God, he said something bad about me. I must be very bad now. And, I mean, as kids in school, it's like, he called me an asshole. Yeah, he's a wanker. You know? It's just, you're much more normal there. And as soon as it's public, people get very picky about like, oh my God, he said a dirty word to me and in the same sentence. And it's just sad that we stop actually arguing like adults in public, but it's all about emotions. Maybe it's Christmas that we're just all nuts about it at the moment, but it's just happening and it annoys me. And it annoys me because being a web developer rocks. I mean, like, I am from Germany. I didn't go to university. I didn't finish any job education. I would be on the street here. But I'm a web developer, and I get money for that. And I couldn't learn it in university when I came out to be a web developer. Coming out as a web developer, anyways. And I couldn't learn it in school. I just made it, and I'd made myself. And it's still possible. It's a market that is so open and so cool. And we argue about little things like, oh my God, you said my header tags are wrong. And it's just, instead of just celebrating what we're doing. And the first thing about this is like, we like doing our jobs. Who here hates being a web developer in this one? Of course, you wouldn't come out in a team, but you wouldn't be here if you weren't interested in your job more than a 9-to-5. And ask any people around you, like ask your banking friends how they like their job right now. Or my sister works in the unemployment office. Guess how many happy people she has in front of you. And we are content with what we do, so we have to find some way to actually be annoyed about it. So we get away with much more than any other job I ever had as well. That's, no, people don't know what we're doing. Like, most of the time we complain about our boss being ignorant about what we do. That's a benefit. That's sometimes a really good thing, because you can deliver something in 2 days and spend 5 days making your own CSS3 transformation thing that the company doesn't know about. And that's good. So let's celebrate that a bit. So we learn from another, and with lots and lots of free resources. Try to learn, I don't know, Java development right now, and try to find a free resource that's not 20 years old. And, well, no, none of you is over 50, so it's not really interesting for you. Maybe a bad example. But everything we do, we give out in public and give it out for free. HTML5 online books, HTML5 blogs. You can learn all this stuff out there. Our main task is to actually find the good stuff. And this is where this CSS please and these kind of things are coming in. People even created for us. How much more do we want? So our market has not enough people to fill the demand. It's the only market I know where companies are like, oh my God, we have to hire 50,000 more people. Where do we come from? Everybody else like, yeah, they just got 6,000 laid off there, 5,000 laid off there. We don't have any jobs for them. But we complain about the market being hostile and being problematic. And companies apply to us for hiring us. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I got an offer from a company, a really boring product in California. They offered me $40,000 sign-up bonus. I didn't have that as a wage in the past. This is a sign-up bonus to start at a company. This is how silly it gets nowadays. So why is all this craving to be unhappy and start arguments? Is it just like we feel, we feel unhappy that we're so happy? We feel unhappy that our market is so good, so we have to find a way to complain about it? I mean, it's like, I don't know, it just confuses me. We have a great job going, and it's change, that's the problem. We have change going on right now. There's a clash of like HTML5, new people wanting to build things that the user experience is great of, and you write as few lines of code as possible, versus the old school that says like it has to be properly structured, because otherwise we'll bite you in the bum 2 months later. And we just don't communicate that with each other yet. And for some people, change is scary. For other people, change is a great opportunity. Sometimes change is managed as it needs to change. Like, for example, that one-page block that keeps reloading in JavaScript, what's the point of that? A block can be static pages. There's no benefit of having a block that reloads without me seeing how it reloads and what the content is. It's just a matter of like, oh, we have this technology, let's put it in there. And we do that all the time. And that's partly how we learned, but it's not necessarily to have change for the sake of change. And it's all about out with the old, like, oh, we're a new generation now, so we have to get rid of all this old stuff, like people like Stallman don't care about anymore. And it's a normal thing for people to do. I mean, we all hated our teachers and think they know nothing. But that's the benefit of being a teacher, because you get that animosity every day, so you don't care anymore. Most of them start drinking, actually. But, for example, in Northern Lights, one of my favorite books when it comes to like kids' novels and things, there's a great sentence in there that says, like, the duty of the old is to be anxious on behalf of the young, and the duty of the young is to scorn the anxiety of the old. So we hate when our parents are like, when my mom's like, oh, drive safely. That's exactly the same thing, but it's the same in web development right now. The people that have been around for ages are thinking you're doing the same mistakes again we did, and people don't see that yet, but it might happen. So it's all about arguments and winning the argument. It doesn't really matter anymore when somebody disagrees with you online if it's about the topic. I had it a few days ago when Paul Roger just uploaded a new thing. I have a style editor now in the next Firefox. How do you like that? And the first answer was like, I just wished Firefox to be as fast as Chrome. So it has nothing to do with the thing that Paul asked him about. It actually, basically, Paul spent months on this great style editor, and the only answer he gets like, hey, the thing that you're not related to, that's really shit, by the way. So I don't get this kind of trolling in like, it's like light trolling. It's not even like professional trolling. It's just like, okay, I want to disagree on something, got to find something. And you find something about every company. I used to work on the McDonald's website, and they do a lot of charity work. They do a lot of great stuff like planting trees and like helping children and these kind of things. And every time we had a press release about this, all the comments and all the backlash was like, yeah, but McDonald's is evil and all the waste you create and everything we do. So McDonald's asked us not to release these news anymore, but just release product news. In the end, it meant that the budget that McDonald's had for social work got cut into a fifth of what it was before. Because if you don't have a public voice that says, we do cool stuff, then companies don't spend money on it. And it's the same when you just shoot down somebody in flames, some company, they might not support you in the future anymore. Strange that. But it happens. So if you like to go to Microsoft conferences and you keep calling in public that they're not necessary anymore, there won't be any conferences. Is it bad? Is it good? But it will just be an effect of that, what you're doing. And it's all about the like argument for argument's sake, and I don't get this because you can always derange people. So I looked at things, and I said, like, what is web design like? And web design is like ski jumping. Bear with me, it's a bit of a stretch, but ski jumping is awesome. The point is, I don't care at all about the sport, or I don't know what it's about. But I used to be a newscaster at the radio station, so I read the news, and it was bad enough to read the names of, like, local people, politicians, and things like that. And it's always fun to see BBC reporters or German reporters read out wonderful names like these and really trying to best what's going on there. And it's just wonderful to see this kind of sport that is so Scandinavian that nobody else cares and knows about. And then, of course, there's the fun of trying to understand what that person is saying, which I always completely fail at. So Ski jumping started as a daredevil thing. Like, people just said, okay, we are on these little things going down the mountain and falling over and breaking our bones. That's not good enough. We probably should leave the earth as well. That makes it much more dangerous. That is really, really cool. So they built these little ramps and they started flying there. Most of the time, the mustache caught most of the wind. And then they're like, they were up there and like, fuck, 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 fuck. Okay, I saved it. That's good. It's fine. But it was all about this showing off thing. And that's exactly how we actually started a bit on the web. Because at the beginning, web design was this joke. The designers of old, the print designers, knew for years what typography is like, what colors to use, what sentence structure, I don't know about typography, something that they say all the time. And they said web design will never be that. Web design is for university stuff and texts being like laid out and linked to each other. Well done. Nobody needs that stuff. It's for theoretical people, and design is for beautiful people, so it's not going to work out. So we actually had to fight different foes than we do now. We think now the browsers are our enemies, as web developers we always do. But back then it was a different story. We actually had to fight the prejudices we had for web design. So web design was not real design, for starters, because you don't have the richness that design should have. It was not development either, because it's like HTML, that's not code, it's not Turing complete. What are you? Sissy. There's actually awesome software like FrontPage that can do all you need. You don't need a web developer. Later on it was Dreamweaver, then it was whatever. There's always some piece of software that will make sure that people don't have to write any front-end code. And they always vanish really fast as well. But at that time, it was still a big threat because people like to write their websites in Word and then press FrontPage and put them up on an FTP somewhere. And it was about moving the print designs to a new medium. People didn't care about the web or the usability of it or what people use in browsers. It was all about, like, that's what it looks like in print. Make it work on screen, no matter what hoops you had to jump through. I mean, Illustrator had a safe as HTML version, and that was just a big GIF with, like, a map on top of it, everything you did in Illustrator. And there's several sites out there that still use that thing. And of course, without changing the design rules, because, hey, they were 40 years old. Nobody needs to support this web thing. So it's your fault. And there were no guidelines. Trial and error is all we had. We did random stuff. We did terribly random stuff, but we had to try it out to make it work. And whenever I see something that is completely useless, and I'm tempted to start like, yeah, but then I remember we did use this thing in the past. We learned a few things from it. You don't have to do the path menu in CSS3 anymore. 8 people have done it last week. It's enough. But it's a good idea to try something else in CSS that hasn't been done. The main difference of web design community to other communities, and I did interactive CD-ROMs before that in QuickTime VR, was that we shared. We actually talked about the stuff that we've done. When we found a CSS trick, we blogged about it. When we found a way to save images crisper in Photoshop with ULEED Smart Saver and cool things like that, then we actually wrote about how to set it up to have good results. We shared the information. That was the main difference. And that's why it hurts me now when people say it's a hostile environment. It's dangerous to be a web developer because people might disagree with you. Oh, people might disagree with you on a train. It's called humans. We had then advancement in equipment and safety. And that was when we started in ski jumping, where we started measuring how fast people jumped. And we had like real jump things like the big ones here in Germany or Holmenkollen in Norway, which is a wonderful word as well, Holmenkollen. And they started putting helmets on because it's probably a good idea not to die when you fall. it's probably a good idea to have like a tight suit and not these like flapping trousers that they had before, because it's speedier and it's good, and it means that fat people aren't allowed to jump because they just don't fit in them. And we structured our approach in web development, in the world of web development, and this was the separation of concerns. And this is being poo-pooed by a lot of people, but it still makes a lot of sense. It still makes a lot of sense to have HTML for structure, CSS for look and feel, and JavaScript and Flash for extra bling. This was only what we could do back then. There was no way to do something server-side as cool as we can do now with Mustache or with other stuff. We just had to separate it out. And it was basically not only because of wanting to separate it, but also different people did the different things. The JavaScript guy didn't know HTML much or didn't care much about it. These were the people that gave us these 400 lines of document right. And these wonderful things that write on a table for everything, no matter what it is. But it made sense to put them different skill sets into different areas. And that's where we started doing that. And we defined our roles in the project. For a start, a web developer out of a sudden was not a joke anymore. It was a person on the project. It was a billable resource to a client. And we only could do that when we started thinking about our craft cleverer and actually more professional than we did before. And there were front-end specialists. I was a HTML programmer at one time on my business card. I still don't know what that means. But it was basically I had a front-end job. And web development was not designers or HTML monkeys. I had HTML monkey as a job title as well once. That was a startup that didn't go far. But it was cool to have. I mean, like, monkey suit and everything was good. And then a new threat to the web came around, and it came as a disguise. It came as the coolest and absolutely most amazing browser on this planet, which was Internet Explorer 6 at that time. And it was cool. It was amazing what you can do with it. When you read the old documentation on MSDN, which is still working because cool links don't change. Actually, they changed a lot, but they're still searchable. You could rotate things on the screen in Internet Explorer 5. There was a filter for that. There was a matrix transition filter that would allow you to tilt, skew, and do all kinds of things that we now jump through hoops to make work in all the HTML5 browsers. Worked in Internet Explorer. If you wrote it in a random syntax, only for Internet Explorer. And that was the big danger there. That was the big problem of it. And the problem of it is that people just started to get into that and get too much attached to the Internet Explorer 6. And Paul talked about this, that we have intranet apps. And right now, we have, you need Chrome to see this website. Or we built only this for WebKit. Or we built only this for iOS. So we're repeating these same mistakes. So that's a big danger that I'm seeing. And Internet Explorer 6, remember, was the coolest browser on the block. Gave us the promise to write less code than for anybody else. And this is why we have these room booking systems, flight systems, university internal Blackboard systems that only work in Internet Explorer and are not getting replaced because it's too expensive to replace them. And they're not getting maintained for another browser because it would be too expensive to fix them for a new browser. In ski jumping, we had a few changes. We had the ski jumpers normally had the arms in front like Superman style. And that was called the Kongsberger technique by Jacob Tulin-Thams and Sigmund Ruud during World War I. They changed it a bit, and they modified the technique by putting their arms backwards when they were jumping. That was Andreas Descher and Eric Windisch in 1950s. Then the Descher-Windisch technique was a standard until the 70s, so people started doing that until the 70s. And Jochen Danneberg then also moved the arms back, an Eastern German jumper, and on the ramp to even get further. It's amazing information, isn't it? You're all fucking bored right now. Now imagine somebody just coming from university and wanting to build an HTML5 app for Android and you start talking about problems in Internet Explorer 6 to them. That is exactly the same mistake we do. Don't repeat unnecessary information like this as the first way in. Don't bore people with tales of the past that were of woe and terrible things. It's good that new developers do new things and fail at them. But we should not tell them like that will never work in a browser that you really don't care about and have never seen. But this is what we do. This is what we do constantly. And that's why there's these hardliners in the HTML5 world that says, like, everything these old guys say is not necessary anymore. And some of the things are necessary. Not all of them, but some of them are. Now, in ski jumping, I'm going short again. We started to measure the distances. And we actually started to realize every jumper did the same distance. So it was, like, really boring competitions. Like, I was like, oh, it was, like, 15 centimeters more than the other. That's amazing. It's a bit like the comparison that Paul showed earlier. Now we saved 15 bytes on that. Amazing. But it's a different story. So they started doing a style node. And that was cool, because it allowed jumpers that are not necessarily as good as other when it comes to distance to actually show how good they can jump, how beautiful their jump is. So how straight their body was, how their skis didn't flap, these kind of things. So I had a B node. You had to put some style onto it, not only release the thing and get there. And this is where hardliners in web design come from, the other part, not the HTML5 kids. We proved that web standards worked at one time. We got a job description as a web front-end developer. We got jobs that were only for HTML5 and CSS. I hope I didn't affront you. No? Now we wanted to make it work. And we wanted to make it work for the future. We were building this future web that that like Tim Berners-Lee was talking about a lot as well. So we wanted to make it predictable, teachable, and understandable. And you can only do that not by showing cool implementations, but you can only do it by having a standard and guidelines that can be enforced and taught. And universities still don't care much about web development because the standards that we have right now are already outdated. So we have to find a way in between those two. So developing a standard means less documentation needs to a standard. If your web, if your code is standard compliant and you don't have to say, this is a hack for IE, this is a hack for Safari, this is a hack for this, and the handover procedures get much, much faster. So that is one good thing about them. Handovers are much easier, as I just said. It makes errors predictable and repeatable. If my HTML validated, at least I knew that there was something wrong in the browser, not in my HTML. If I don't close random tags and the browser does something with them and I don't know why it's doing it, well, you didn't close your tags. So close the tags and see if that still exists. If it still exists, then they have a bigger problem. Other than that, why didn't you close your tags? This speeds up debugging as well, because you know where the error is. You know the error must be somewhere, not in your HTML, because that is okay. That shows okay in other browsers. And then in the ski jumping world, the whole style thing got blown out of water by a guy called Jan Böcklev, who all of a sudden started jumping like that. So it had basically the grace of a landing albatross. And all the people, like, first time he did it, were like, what's going on there? It's like, that's a really bad style note. And then he's like 20 meters more than the others, and they're like, whoa. And now everybody does it. Everybody does the V thing. And it's great for showing these, the brand of your skis as well, as you can see. And the main thing is then the ski jumping committee, the IOC, changed the scoring and said, like, you know what, the V jump is now a style. And we see how well it was executed. Not like, oh my god, only the parallel one is good, the other one will always be a bad mark. No, everybody did it, they got much further with it, so we might as well change the scoring. And in web development, we just don't do that. The people, the overlords of web development that say this is good web development, don't look at the new kids and their code and say, like, yeah, maybe that was a good idea. They're like, oh no, it should be the things of the past. Other than that, it's never good. And that will kill us if we don't do it properly. It's not a crime to not close your tags. It's not a problem. If you explain why, if there's a good reason for it, fair enough. If it's just I was too lazy, not necessarily fair enough. Some apps do need JavaScript. So the whole argument of, like, if I turn off JavaScript and CSS and I turn my monitor around, your website doesn't work anymore. You know, that's... Really, you know, find a real case out there. I mean, it's my favorite is when people are like, well, if you use important, then people with a user style sheet might have a problem. I have not encountered any person with a user style sheet that wasn't on the CSS working group. It's a very niche market that you're aiming for if you try to really care about that stuff. So generated markup follows other rules. You can't go to Gmail and do a view source and call that Google is really bad in HTML. Because that came from Google Web Toolkit or native client or whatever they use to actually generate that stuff. As Paul said, it's optimized code for the machine that you're looking on at the moment. So the whole learning everything from view source is still valid, but the view source is on GitHub, not in your browser. Because if you look at a good website out there, a good web application, you look at it in Firefox and you look at it in Internet Explorer, you get different markup because it's optimized for the quirks of the different browsers. So there's no one-size-fits-all view source anymore. So we cannot just point at people and say, like, oh, you don't do that like we did in the past, that's bad. Of course, you have to apply where it's sensible. Not everything has to be a web application. So the other side of that argument always says, like, yeah, but I've got to shave every millisecond of my browser because it needs to be like that, because everything should be like that web app. Rules for a web application don't apply to a blog. Same way the other way around. It's like it's a shifting thing, as Paul said as well. We have to find rules that apply across all the things we have to deliver at the delivery time and not like, okay, this will be for everything. So build to maintain is the main point about standards. And that's where a lot of truisms are being outed, like, yeah, for our team, that was the best thing ever. Well, your team is going to be disbanded. Your company might go bankrupt. The code goes to somebody else. You get acquired by another company. They have to look at that code. If you haven't documented what was best for your team, then there will not be anything for the others to maintain. So it's a dangerous thing to say our maintenance is great right now because it's these people. The average that people work in a company right now is 3 years. So the code that's great for you to understand, 3 years later will be given to somebody else. And he stands there, heh. What do? We write it from scratch. Projects are more likely to be rebuilt than changed. And I've seen it all the time. I've seen it in Yahoo. I've seen it in my old company. I've seen it in Mozilla. It's like everybody comes in with something new, like, yeah, you know, this is PHP. We do things in Python now. And like, okay, they build it from scratch. And sometimes it's fast enough. That's good. But why did the other stuff have to die that people spent months and months working on? So the question is longevity a big dream? Of course, that's all what the web standards movement is about. Like, we build for the future. You never have to change your code again. The other day, I found a website I wrote in 1998, and it still worked okay in the new browsers because I made a simple HTML with a bit of CSS that almost was supported back then and a few JavaScript tricks to lay out things. And that's good. That's a longevity that's there. But a lot of stuff that we build right now is for the bin. It's basically, we built it, and it's going to be done. Your company will get bought by a big company. Your source code will not be used anymore because they have to implement it into a bigger environment and these kind of things. So maybe the longevity dream that we have as web developers or web standards evangelists is not there. This is actually a bridge in Krakow where people, when they start going steady or when they get married or both, they actually put these locks up to show it's for the future and it's forever. And then you see people going there and cutting their locks out when it didn't work out. So that's a bit what web development looks at time as well. And it's another fight between those two hurdles, is a craft versus commodity. People see web development as a craft that came from the past, that had to fight the designers, that had to fight the what you see is what you get editors. This is a skill set. This is something that has masters and people learning it, and there's rules for it. And other people say, web development, HTML, just put something there, and it's going to be an interface. It's going to change anyway soon. Facebook, Twitter, all their interfaces change constantly, but it's only one project. You cannot say Twitter changes constantly, so everything can change constantly. But it's a commodity thing, and it gets more... we're not the cool kids anymore, the amazing things that nobody understands as a market. The big thing that gets mentioned a lot, and a lot of the fight back from the new crowd of people that bring new technologies in, is has actually a hidden agenda. And the hidden agenda is that companies need to hire people. As I said in the beginning, we have lots and lots of people missing in web development. So we get people as soon as possible from university, sometimes even before that, and we just give them lots and lots of money and tell them to give up on university. Good, fair enough. Didn't hurt me. But the problem with that is that in university they learn nothing that actually is of use, that's useful things for us as web developers. You don't learn much that actually in a normal computer science course that would do you any good if you have to work for somebody like Yahoo later on. So when you don't work in search or in the backend and the hardcore algorithmic things. So we had to find a way to actually get these new graduates into companies and hit the ground running without having to re-educate them for half a year, because re-education is always the hardest thing to do. Something that people are already believing in, making them unbelieve it is almost impossible. And we think we put this Chippendale tables and beautiful, beautiful things, whereas in reality, a lot of people ask for the Billy. Everybody who has his own flat, it's the first thing you buy at IKEA. It's like 10 euros. It's the first thing you have. So a lot of web development is seen as these like commodity things, like quick things to go out there and get the job done. Whereas we as like the standardistas say, well, it has to be flourishes in there. It has to be semantically beautiful. It has to have this and that. There are two delivery circles here that we should be thinking about. So change in general needs consent. All that old fighting and bickering with each other doesn't make the change easier. It actually makes it much, much harder. It takes it out much, much longer. As Flocke said earlier, that we are in a city of change right now. We are in a changing period. And a lot of stuff that we say right now that is awesome will not be awesome tomorrow. And that's good. But we need to start consenting with each other and talking to each other about these things rather than like, haha, you were wrong, mine was better, haha, great. This is, what are we like in preschool? Then we could say names to each other, but we can't. So some mistakes I think we should not repeat, and there's no one browser to support. When people say like, oh yeah, I saw everything about WebKit, dangerous. Fair enough, if it's for your quick release, you want to make money with an app and you don't want to care about it later on, fair enough, do it. But there's more browsers to support, and there will be new browsers out there, especially on mobile. There's lots and lots of stuff that is actually not, that you haven't seen yet, that might be interesting in the future. So sticking to one browser or one environment never was working for me, and I've done it for 14 years, and I have a good job. So sloppy code that expects browsers to fix things for us is dangerous. And it's amazing how many people see this as a benefit. Like, oh yeah, browsers do put semicolons in my JavaScript if I don't write them in there. I don't need curly braces on a one-liner. That's totally fine. I mean, that's okay. But everything you write, and you hope the browser does it for you, a next browser might not do it for you. But even more important, the next developer might not understand what you've been doing there. So I could give this talk, und jeden zweiten Satz in Deutsch. I could speak in English, explain some things, und dann in Deutsch würde ich weiterreden und jeder würde es verstehen. I could mix English und Deutsch without a problem. Because 90% here sprechen Deutsch und Englisch. You would all be out of a sudden saying like, oh my god, that's hard to follow. But it's okay, 90% of the room speaks English and German, right? It's the same with like 90% of my users use the newest browser, so I don't need to put these things in there. Think about the impact that your code has to the people in the future, and think about how much you confuse people. When I write a blog post, I could stop using white space or full stops at the end of the sentence. You figure it out. Fair enough. I've got great things. I got more things to do. I got another blog post to write. So syntax is not there for a browser. Syntax is there for the other users to understand what you've been doing. So a comment in there or a function name that is not IX or D62 makes a lot of sense. But it's but a lot of people, nah, we don't need that anymore. On the other hand, don't be inflexible and let go. If you do CSS3 animation stuff, that's beautiful and just makes a button grow when you go on it, or glows things or rotates things around, totally fine for Internet Explorer 6 not to get this. We don't have to build a polyfill for bloody everything that we build on the web, because this browser has to die. And I don't get it how people are like, oh, but this won't work in that browser. Yeah, it's flourish. It's on top of things. It's beautiful. It makes it better for the new browsers. It's not necessary for the main core. So why should you try to shoehorn it into another system? XCanvas, simulating Canvas and WebGL with Flash for Internet Explorer. Don't do that. So let's not limit ourselves in our discussions. Let's fix the cause. We teach web development far too late. Right now, web development is like when you start working in a company, or you do it in your free time. You don't learn it in your degree. You don't get it out there in schools. We just are in there far too late. Mozilla is doing something with this Hackasaurus project and our outreach to schools. A few people actually who were bored of this bickering in the scene went into academia and start now lecturing at universities. And that's great. You should, as university students, ask your professors to invite people like us every bloody week. You need information from the market out there because you want to hit the ground running when you get out there. And we should focus as a community on teaching people the practices that made us what we are, not the practices that we thought people should follow. So what works in a certain fixed environment is not a best practice. Something that is a performance necessity for Gmail or Google search result page is not a best practice for the web, because unless you build Gmail or a Google research result page, which you probably won't if you don't work for Google, because they don't pay you if you do it in your free time. So getting these edge case best practices and finding out things that like, oh, Internet Explorer only downloads 31 style sheets. You're like, yeah, great. So that's an edge case that came from Drupal, actually, funnily enough. But it's good to find these bugs, but it's not like don't do more than 32 style sheets, because you do that from the beginning, you're an idiot. So there's best practices should not come from edge case problems. So web development is much semantically valuable. Web development ranges. It's a blog, it's a Facebook, it's a Google Docs, and it's the Wilderness Downtown interactive music video. All of these use JavaScript, CSS, and HTML to different degrees and to different percentages of the project. So our best practices and our evangelism and our bickering should be about these things that could be applied to all of them, or about the best practices for this certain product or for these certain things. Like the Taffy approach that Paul showed. The title is totally pointless because nobody in Europe knows what Taffy is. But it was a beautiful idea to say, make it a tiered thing. Just, okay, this is okay for a web application. This is okay for a blog. This is okay for Wilderness Downtown. Don't punish the user, though. I think still any button that is on the web that doesn't do anything when I click on it means we failed as developers. And we failed badly because we made the people hurt that we're supposed to make happy and are supposed to pay our money. All of these need different approaches and rules. And let's talk about the fans and the supporters, not the hooligans. I talked about earlier that we love to have this controversy. We love to actually have arguments and we love to give like one-liners to shut people up. A lot of conferences come up to me, and I spoke at 28 conferences last year, 36. They come up to us and say, like, well, we have a browser panel at the end. It would be good if you guys disagree with something to give it a bit more vibe. You're like, really? You know, it's like, shall we just fight with, like, Jell-O and, like, a kiddie pool full of Jell-O? And it's just, because when we do these things, when you say something glib about what Paul says, or she says something about Firefox, or we all say something about Internet Explorer, then people would just quote that out of context and say, like, hey, as Paul Irish said last week, Firefox makes your hair grow, or whatever. And people take it totally down, totally out of context. And that these are the hooligans of web development to me. These are the people that are so fanboys of one product or one environment or one programming language that they just repeat the same stupid one-liners about the other projects over and over and over again. And these are the people who are like, oh, you said that on Twitter. No, just they're boring. They're really, really boring people, and they're hurting the community. So let's not give them any grandstanding, but just let not care about them anymore. So fix things for people instead of telling them off for not doing it. That's one thing I just started, and I haven't released it yet. And it was released it. I put up a GitHub page. I actually want people to go through GitHub and go through CSS solutions that are WebKit only, or Firefox only, or IE only, or Opera only, and just put the other extensions in there as well. Instead of telling the person off, like, why do you do this only on CSS, that CSS 3D transformation only on WebKit, it works in Firefox now as well. Instead of going through that communication channel, just go to GitHub, fix it, send them a pull request. I can tell you, none of the developers out there will tell you off for fixing their stuff. But they will tell you off for sending you an email and telling them, why didn't you do it for that? Because I'm too busy, blah, 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 blah. So let's fix the web with a bit of skill that we can put in there, because in the end, we want things to work and we want things to learn. And I want to leave you with the story of Eddie the Eagle Egbert, who's the only ski jumper in English history. A beautiful, beautiful man, as you can see. Eddie was a skier who wanted to be in the 1988 Olympics. The only problem was he wasn't good enough, which is a problem if you want to go to the Olympics. But he found that England doesn't have any ski jumpers at all. So he taught himself ski jumping to a degree. And there was no competition, so he became the English ski jumper for the Olympic Games 1988. Which was pretty cool. And he scored 73.5 meters, which made him the place 56 of 57. Because 57 got disqualified. However, it had a few things in there. It caused the IOC, the International Committee of the Olympic Games, to enforce an Eagle rule. So as it was that embarrassing that anybody with no talent whatsoever came up there, and he was grandstanding, he was joking before he was jumping. He wasn't joking while he was jumping because he was afraid. But he was basically making a fun out of it, and a very English comedy-style fun out of it. And the IOC then said, like, okay, the Eagle Rule, which named after him, it means that you have to be in international competitions before you actually can, and win a few of them before you can actually go to the Olympics. So that rule is in there because of him now. It wasn't there before. And he actually became a media success, because the English people love an underdog, so that's why I'm successful there as well. And they actually had him in interviews, and they made him spokesperson for advertising things, and he got up to 10,000 English pounds per hour for his speaking engagements, for being a really failed ski jumper. But the thing about him was, he was driven, he wanted to do it. He said, I have an idea, and I want to do that, I'm not afraid to plunge to my sudden death on a ski slope, because I don't know how to do it, but it would be a good thing to try out, and what stops us from doing that? I mean, the bitching, the competing with each other doesn't get us anywhere. But just chiming in from time to time, when Paul and me on Twitter tell each other off, and some of you chiming in saying, like, guys, I actually look up to you. What the hell are you doing? You're actually not helping each other out here. Or I can quote things out of context that would not help any of you right now. That would be a great thing to happen, because we have to grow up as a community, and we have to stop being addicted to competing with each other and become much more into, like, this is good, let's find a consensus and make it a recommendation, not a best practice. And we want the same things. There's no split in the community. The HTML5 people want to build things for people. The web standards people want to build good interfaces for end users. That's a common goal we have. We should focus on that again. We fail to ask for reasons. we always say like, okay, this is really, really bad. Let's write a blog post. What is wrong about it? Ask it other than like, why is that so bad? What happened? What was the decision to make that thing 500 divs instead of like one H1? It would be interesting because sometimes there's reasons for that. Sometimes it just means I could not access the system. I just had some Java renderer that came out with that stuff and I can't access that. I'm not allowed to do it. These kind of stupid things that international development is sometimes about. And we might be unaware of pressures. If something gets released quickly that is totally awful and we shoot it down in flames, we might not be aware that it had to be out because some new project manager got hired or somebody needed a promotion and they went down to the developer and said, like, that needs to be out tomorrow. I don't care what it looks like. You do it now or you get fired and whatever thing. There's a lot of pressures going on in our work environment that we never talk about. We always hush them up because we're like, yeah, we're cool web developers. None of that things happen. Sometimes you're like, yeah, I really hate that. I mean, I released a lot of code that I didn't like. I'm the kind of perfectionist that I want to fix that again, but you never get the time to do it again. So it's live online later on. That's why I keep your own DVDs and CDs of the stuff that you do as well. So we need to understand the goal in order to critique an approach. What was that aimed at? Why did you do it that way? So I made jokes about the Google blog earlier. Why is that a one-page app? There might be a reason for it. There might be a goal for it, that they want to test out a platform on a high-level blog like that and see if it works out. So I didn't ask for the goal. I just made a glib remark that now can spark another conversation. So probably I'll be the new Paul Irish versus Selfman next week. No, I'm on holiday. It's not it. So a bit more understanding about why the reasons are there rather than like pointing at errors would be good. And then we don't have that discontent and we don't have the problems, but we actually are a great community. And we are a great community. So if any of you doesn't do it yet and wants to go into web development, bloody do it. It's better than going and being a banker. Definitely. And that's all I had. So let's work on this together. Thank you.